This is On Target St. John's, a look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know? The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
And good afternoon, everyone. Well, as you know, Newfoundland and Labrador is in the midst of an election campaign, the likes of which have never been before seen in our history. The province, or rather the government, that called the election because, in quotations, this was the safest time, now lies in limbo, and the final election results may not be known until weeks after a new government should have already been chosen. The entire situation has created even greater confusion about the right to vote and access to the democratic process. It appears as though it was not clear who had the jurisdiction or authority to postpone in-person voting in the election, but hands were finally forced when election workers started resigning in droves and the variant was confirmed on the eve of in-person voting, moving the entire province into alert level 5. All this comes with no guarantee that the government that called the election, ostensibly to gain a needed majority, will be any better off after all is said and done. Whatever way you look at it, it is not an ideal situation. The co-founder of Democracy Watch has been watching it all unfold here with great interest. Duff Conacher joins me now from Ottawa. Hi, Duff.
Hello, how are you?
Great. What do you make of what's happening here in Newfoundland and Labrador?
It's a big mess, and it's unfortunate that likely many people are going to have their right to vote violated and won't really be able to do much about it.
Violated? How do you mean?
Well, just not having time to get through the whole mail-in ballot process. And as a result, they're going to be sitting there after election is over trying to hold someone accountable, and it's not really going to be possible.
You've called this a cautionary tale for any premier across the country thinking of calling an election anytime soon. Why?
Yes, and also the Prime Minister and the federal opposition parties. There's a minority government at the federal level also. So the Prime Minister might try a snap election, although Democracy Watch's position is that would be a violation of the federal fixed election date law. And or the opposition parties may try and force an election. And I just think that it's a bad time for an election anywhere in the country because an outbreak could happen. You had BC and New Brunswick and Saskatchewan do elections successfully in the fall, but I think they were just lucky. There could have easily been an outbreak in any of those jurisdictions, as there have been since.
Has the pandemic, like it has in so many areas of our life and society now, has the pandemic shone a light on some of the weaknesses in the legislation that we now have surrounding elections?
Yes, and at the federal level, certainly Elections Canada has said some changes would need to be made to really successfully pull off an election if it had to all be done by mail-in ballot. And those changes have not been made yet. So that's another part of why we need caution at the federal level for either the Prime Minister or opposition parties thinking about pushing for an election sooner than later. And in other areas of the country, also the possibility of an outbreak means lots of adjustments have to be made. And some of those adjustments will not work for some voters. As the chief electoral officer has acknowledged, some people won't be able to vote. And the blame really falls on the premier. There was no reason to call this election now. He could have waited until a point in time when most experts say it would be much better to have people gathering in places and also given a lot more notice about it so that adjustments could have been made, even if it was held now, just in case of an outbreak, to ensure that those adjustments would accommodate everyone who wants to vote. So the Premier is really the one to blame. He shouldn't have called the election. But I also think that there's some evidence that the Chief Electoral Officer didn't do enough to consult with everyone and ensure that the changes he was making were going to allow everyone to vote who wanted to.
So what choice did Premier Fury have in calling an election?
Well, he had time. There was no rush. And most experts are saying life will be much more back to normal when most adults are vaccinated. So he should have waited until that time came. And that, according to all estimates, should happen by early fall. And there was still time within the deadline set out in the legislation in Newfoundland and Labrador to have an election in the fall and comply with the law. And if it looked like that wouldn't happen, well, then the law could be changed. And I think you would see cooperation from the opposition parties in doing that, because they would want to obviously have a legal election and ensure the right to vote for everyone who wants to vote.
So what kind of decision-making processes were behind the timing of this particular election? Any idea?
No, I mean, I don't know for sure. I can't do a Vulcan mind meld with the premier, but usually premiers, prime ministers call elections, or if there's a minority government situation, opposition parties force an election when it's best for them, when it looks like it will help them to win. And it's their personal political interest that is paramount. So I imagine that's what was at play in this case as well. We saw that in the fall with BC and New Brunswick, both in minority government situations, and both premiers up in the polls, and they called snap elections in violation of their fixed election date laws. Democracy Watch has challenged both of those decisions in court as violations of the fixed election date laws, and most commentators say the reason they called the election is that it looked like they'd have a good chance of winning the majority if they'd called it at that time. So, you know, that's what we generally see with election calls looking back decades in Canada, is they're called by the party leaders when it's best for them and their party.
We had, memory serves, set a fixed elections in Newfoundland and Labrador. I think it happened once, and I can't remember it happening again. I stand to be corrected on that. I'm just speaking off the top of my head now. So what happened to the fixed election dates, and why do governments not abide by them?
Well, there is a good rule, actually, in Newfoundland and Labrador, that if the premier changes in between elections, that by a party leadership change, that new premier would have to get a mandate from the voters sooner than later. That's a good rule to have, and that's why you see the new deadline and different deadline for the election in Newfoundland and Labrador. In other parts of the country, why are they calling snap elections in violation of the fixed election dates? As I said, most commentators look at New Brunswick and BC, and those elections were called by those premiers because they were up in the polls and they had minority governments and wanted majority power. Saskatchewan was actually following its fixed election date legislation and luckily didn't have an outbreak. There was an argument there, though, to work with all the parties and change it just because of the danger of an outbreak, the danger that we've seen come to reality in Newfoundland and Labrador and really upset the whole election process. And as I say, likely end up violating many people's right to vote because they won't have a chance to get through successfully the whole mail-in ballot process before the deadline. So Saskatchewan was lucky, BC and New Brunswick are lucky, different reasons though, as to why those elections occurred. And it's unfortunate, you know, almost every province now and the federal level have fixed election dates. And when they passed those laws, they said, we're doing this because it makes the election more fair, because all the parties and all the candidates and people who might want to run and volunteer all know when the election's coming so they can plan their lives. And the government can't just choose a time that's good for them and bad for the opposition parties. And then they just kind of ignore that rhetoric when it looks good for them to jump in and hold an election, which is what we saw in the fall in BC and New Brunswick. And that's why Democracy Watch has challenged those decisions by the two premiers in those provinces in court. And we're hoping the courts will rule that they did violate the law. It's not going to overturn the election result, but at least we'll be politically costly and hold them accountable and set a precedent that will hopefully stop these kind of unfair, undemocratic snap elections from happening in the future.
And I want to explore that a little bit more when we come back after the break. My guest today on Target is the co-founder of Democracy Watch. He's in Ottawa. Duff Conacher is with us today. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
My guest today is Duff Conacher. He's the co-founder of Democracy Watch. He's in Ottawa. We're talking about the election, the likes of which I can't remember ever seeing before. Have you seen anything unfold like this before, Duff?
No, haven't seen this. Obviously, sometimes there are weather events that cause problems for some people getting to the polls, but nothing like this that changes the whole schedule of a provincial or federal election.
So be that as it may, the election was called because at the time it was considered to be the safest time. That was the words used by the premier. The date was set for Saturday, February 12th. That was to help with various COVID protocols. Saturday, February 13th. And then the worst case scenario, an outbreak of one of the new variants, confirmed community spread. No idea where it's coming from or how far it had gone. People were naturally very worried. At first, it was supposed to be a mail-in ballot in the immediate affected area. Then we had the confirmed community spread. Alert level 5 was imposed, and now suddenly everybody has to mail in these ballots. But it seemed like it took a lot of back and forth, and there was a lot of confusion over who had the jurisdiction about postponing the election date and all of that sort of thing. Who did have that jurisdiction, I suppose, when it came to postponing in-person voting?
Well, that's not exactly clear and could be part of a court challenge, various people have various views on what the legislation says and whether the chief electoral officer actually had the authority to do that. It's possible that question will end up in the courts, but I think there's a lot of hurdles for anyone bringing any court challenges to this whole situation. First of all, it will very much be based on what the election results show. There's going to have to be enough voters in any riding who didn't have a chance to vote who then take a challenge, and there'll have to be enough of them that it would have actually changed the vote in the riding for anything actually to change, even if the court case ends up in a ruling that their right to vote was violated. So they'll have to bring the case first, and there's, you know, a danger and a risk in that, and that you may end up having to pay the cost if you lose. And a judge could take the attitude that, well, you had the chance, and if you really wanted to vote as much as you say you did, then you should have overcome the barriers that were there, maybe not having a computer, being able to register, or because of the Postal Service not being able to get your ballot back quickly enough to be processed, that the voter was responsible for finding ways around those barriers, and that those barriers were reasonable, were like the barrier of having to go to a particular polling station and cast a ballot and make your way there no matter what the weather is, and things like that. So there's just going to be a lot of hurdles and barriers, and in the end, again, if there aren't enough voters in any district, that it would have actually changed the outcome in that district if they had had a chance to vote and exercise their right to vote. Then what's the point of bringing the case really in the end? They're not really going to win any money for having this right violated. And a declaration is not going to do very much, a little bit of political cost to the premier for calling the election. So that's why it's such a bad situation. These people are in a bad position, and they likely won't be able to get any accountability or even a right to vote and have a count in the election results, even if they go to court.
Well, indeed. And so if these legal or constitutional challenges may not go anywhere, do you still see those processes taking place? Will this election ever truly be over in a way?
Well, those voters will have to make a decision. Are they going to invest the time, money, and resources? Can they find a lawyer to do the challenge? And then are they going to stick with it right through the end? If they lost at the first level, would they appeal? So it'll be voters in each of the districts who feel that the way the decisions were made actually violated their right to vote. And that just remains to be seen. It's relatively easy to point that out and contact media and let them know that you think you're in that position compared to actually going to court. And again, that's why it's such a bad, unfair situation, is that many voters could lose their right to vote effectively because of what's happened. And again, why the premier should really face most of the blame for calling the election when he could have waited until a time period when most experts would say it would be safer to proceed and that a chance of an outbreak would be very minimal. So it's just a bad situation overall, and it shows how fragile our right to vote is. And it is, again, a real cautionary tale to premiers across the country and the prime minister and opposition parties at the federal level about proceeding with the election at this time.
When questions were first being raised about the in-person voting, this was before we moved into Alert Level 5 and it was all postponed, but when questions were raised about in-person voting, and we heard from a lot of people who were saying, you know, I'm simply not going to take this chance. I am not going to go out for the first time in my life. I'm not going to go out and vote. We heard that repeatedly from numerous people. But at that time, when I put the question to the chief electoral officer, I was very surprised to hear that there is no threshold by which to gauge whether or not an election is actually valid. In other words, if there was only a 3% voter turnout, that doesn't mean anything. They still count those ballots and there's a result. Is that unusual?
No, it's not. And political parties across the country have not really made this a priority because they've shown they're not really that interested in increasing voter turnout. If they were, they would change the voting system to something more proportional because proportional voting systems count more ballots towards the total number of seats that each party ends up with in the legislature. They would enact things like an honesty in politics law, where you would be penalized to discourage making false promises that bait voters to vote for you, because that would increase voter turnout. They would add on the ballot the right to vote for none of the above, because there are some people who want to vote none of the above, and they don't have that option now. All they have is the option to spoil their ballot. So you would have seen these kind of reforms across the country if parties were really interested in increasing voter turnout and also putting in place thresholds to say, no government can be elected unless a certain percentage of people vote. And the parties across the country have not shown any interest in these reforms. I haven't checked the Progressive Conservative Party platform this time around. In his leadership race platform, Ches Crosby did show the interest in one of the reforms, and that he proposed that there should be an honesty in politics law in Newfoundland and Labrador. I don't know whether he stuck with that promise and put it in the platform for the party this time around. But that was a breakthrough. He was the first political leader in the country to even add that reform to a platform for election. And again, these other reforms are needed as well. You should have a right to vote, none of the above. And a proportional system has been ranked worldwide by experts as being a better system for ending up with a more representative legislature and also for increasing voter turnout.
Should Elections NL have been better prepared, knowing an election was coming in the midst of a pandemic, regardless of the situation?
Well, there wasn't a lot of advance notice given, so that's the one sympathy I have to the chief electoral officer, and that is again puts the blame back more squarely on the premier for essentially calling a snap election and not giving anyone very much notice. And then the chief electoral officer, Bruce Chalk, has had to adjust to the outbreak. Where I don't have a lot of sympathy is I think he should have consulted a bit more. I mean, the initial decision shouldn't have been to suspend in-person voting in just some of the districts. It should have been suspended in all of them. But there should have been a consultation first about that that was broader and took into account exactly how long it might take for some people to register and get their mail-in ballot mailed and through the mail in time. Because that's the evidence that's come out since, is that some people just think it's not possible for them to complete this process in time. Just to mention again about BC and New Brunswick, because you had mentioned people were saying early on, I'm not going to go out and vote in person because there's a possibility that someone who's infected may be there. We saw that in BC and New Brunswick as well. You know, they had called these snap elections. The infection rates were rather low in both provinces, but there were still, especially elderly people expressing concern about going out and voting. And the premiers called the elections anyway, even though, again, they were just lucky that there weren't outbreaks that happened there, because outbreaks came soon after both those elections. So, again, I think there was enough information there for the premier to know in Newfoundland and Labrador that an outbreak could happen anytime. There was still a high chance of it, and that he shouldn't have proceeded with the election. And he put the chief electoral officer in a bad position.
My guest today on On Target is Duff Conacher. He is the co-founder of Democracy Watch. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back. My guest today on Target is Duff Conacher. He is the co-founder of Democracy Watch. And on the issue of mail-in ballots, and there's been some discussion now in the news recently about the mail-in ballots. There was that last final push, I guess, or rush for people applying for their special ballot. 36% of those who answered our question of the day today, non-scientific poll, I should add, said that they're still waiting for their ballot. But 18% said they had no trouble with it. But what struck me when I received my mail-in ballot kit is how it was presented. In other words, it wasn't specific to my particular district, and it wasn't specific with the specific candidates like you would normally see on a ballot. So with the mail-in ballots, what are the likelihood that they will be spoiled or challenged? I mean, it seems like it's designed for those who already know how they're voting, not for those who vote based on issues or, you know, whether or not they like a certain candidate or not.
Yeah, there could be issues spelling a candidate's name properly in the district that you're in properly. Those could end up possibly being spoiled ballots if you make mistakes in those. There is obviously more chance of more mistakes compared to marking an X beside someone's name on a ballot that's already identified and collected at a polling station in a particular district. So, yes, that could end up thwarting more people's right to vote because of people making those mistakes. And also people who have difficulty writing. There have been stories, a story about a woman whose child has a disability and would not be able to write out a full name on a mail-in ballot, and she was questioning whether she could do it for them because it's supposed to be a secret ballot. I think all of these kind of things, but mainly the deadlines, should have been taken into account more by Elections Newfoundland and Labrador and before setting these deadlines, because it sounds like there are many people who have evidence that's clear that they're not going to be able to meet those deadlines. And that could have been taken into account. The deadlines could have been set back a bit further.
Another issue that struck me, I mean, you and I, you know, we watch these things very closely. We like to be as well informed as we possibly can, but people live busy lives and people are doing other things with their lives in many cases. And it strikes me around every election period is how many or people have no idea what district they live in, who their candidates might be. So when you leave it blank, that leaves it way, you know, to my mind, it leaves it open for a lot of error.
Yes, quite possibly. They may know the candidates, but not realize they have to fill in the district, fill it in properly. And that could end up being counted as a spoiled ballot. All of those things are yet to be determined. And, you know, those thankfully spoiled ballot percentages are actually reported. So they'll be able to be tracking about whether there is an increase in spoiled ballots. And of course, the voter turnout will be tracked as well, and be able to be compared to past elections. So there'll be a sense as well as to whether this has hurt voter turnout. I would predict that it will, just because people are used to doing things one way, and this is a totally different way of doing it. And the convenience of going to a polling station that's rather close to you compared to going through the whole process of applying to get a mail-in ballot and going through the whole process of getting it back on time will likely lead to a lower voter turnout as well. The problem is, again, trying to hold anyone accountable for these voters whose fundamental right to vote ends up being violated. After the fact, to go before a judge and say, well, thousands of people have voted, but there's these others that say they didn't have a chance to vote, and they're now going to try to prove to you that the fact that they didn't vote could have changed the election results. And it's just so difficult to prove that, because how would they have voted on one day versus another day when they're frustrated about not being able to vote? It's supposed to be a secret ballot. So what, do they testify that I would have voted this way, and then they're making their ballot choice known? There's just all of these hurdles. Plus, it really places a judge into this impossible situation. And that's why you usually only see in any district across the country election results overturned, where it's a very, very close count. There's a recount, and the recount shows that things should have gone the other way, or where you have just clear evidence of fraud, like ballot box stuffing or some other kind of fraud, where the election result gets overturned. But otherwise, the judges are just in an enormously difficult position trying to judge what would have happened if things had been done in a different way after the election results are already in.
VOCM's Brian Madore had this news in the at the top of the hour at 1 o'clock. The government, of course, last year had to use interim supply bills twice last year to cover the period from April 1st to September 30th in order to pay the bills. We still don't know exactly when the first ballot, final ballot results will be available. What problems do you see presented by a caretaker government, especially one that's in place for such an extended period and during a public health crisis?
Yes, those two definitely go together, because when you have a caretaker government during an election, and in case people don't know that term, it's an unwritten convention, part of our constitutional framework, which is that a government is not supposed to make major decisions during an election period. But that election period is usually only 5, 6, 7 weeks, not this extended period of time. And so, yeah, when you have major issues and you need decisions made because of a public health crisis, it's not a good situation. Having the legislature closed, which is there to play the key role in our governing system of holding the government to account for the decisions they're making, having that closed over an extended period of time is also not a good situation. So your first question to me is, what do I think is going on there? It's a big mess in so many ways, and there's unfairness and lack of government accountability during a very key period where you have a public health crisis that needs addressing on a daily basis.
Does this extended period of a caretaker government exacerbate the issues that we're facing already?
It definitely can. I mean, just so people aren't confused, there is a government. The cabinet is the government, and there's always a cabinet that exists to make decisions. But part of making good decisions is being held accountable, and the legislature is not open to be holding them accountable. And as a result, as well, they're campaigning for re-election and wanting to focus on that and trying to win, which means they're distracted from dealing with this public health crisis. So I've said it before, I'll say it again. The premier really should share most of the blame. It was a mistake to call this election at this time. He could have waited until a time when most experts would say it would be safer and the chances of an outbreak would be lower, especially when the information was out there about these new, much more contagious variants before this election was called. And the possibilities of those traveling and causing outbreaks was known before this election was called. It was a big mistake, and unfortunately is making a very unfair situation for a lot of people.
You spoke about the premier. This rests on his shoulders because he made the decision to call the election. But has been discussed many times here locally is that not only is the province facing a public health crisis, it's also facing a financial crisis. And arguably, the reason why an election was called to try and deal with these financial issues, was there a better way to do that?
To deal with your financial issues overall in Newfoundland and Labrador?
Yeah, just to get it with a minority government situation, I suppose the desire of any government is to be in a majority so they can make their decisions without, you know, being blocked to do that, you know, in the legislature. But, you know, what kind of political decisions surround that kind of thing? How can any government, regardless of who they happen to be, decide when is the best time to do that in the midst of a pandemic?
Dealing with a financial situation. Well, I'm not an expert in the budget situation and deficit and budget surplus situations for governments across Canada.
Do you need a majority, though, to handle those kinds of things decisively?
No, there's no evidence of that from studies done worldwide. Minority governments are just as capable as at making decisions. And the evidence, for example, the International Parliamentary Union, which is the international association of countries that have parliamentary systems, which Canada belongs to, it has said that a proportional voting system is a better voting system. And even though it usually ends up that you have minority government situations or coalition governments as a result of having a proportional voting system, but that those governments make better decisions for more people overall. So that's what international studies show from this association that Canada belongs to. And so there is just no evidence that either our first-past-the-post voting system produces better, more stable governments that make better decisions for more people, or that coalition minority governments do not make decisions that are as good as majority governments.
I want to touch on electoral reform when we come back after the break. My guest today on Target is Duff Conacher, co-founder of Democracy Watch. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
My guest today is Duff Conacher of Democracy Watch, and we were just touching on electoral reform before the break. Duff, are minority or coalition governments better for democracy, better for the electorate as a whole?
That is the evidence from studies worldwide, that proportional voting systems that generally lead to minority or coalition governments end up making better decisions for the most people. And of course, that's not easy to judge, but they're looking at different factors like the overall health and social welfare of the society and overall well-being measurements and economic well-being. When parties are forced to compromise with each other, different parties represent different interests, and when you combine those interests together into a decision, you end up taking care of more people. That's what the evidence shows. So there's been a lot of resistance across Canada to changing the system. One of the big beliefs is that you'll end up with a less stable system, more elections. But that is not also shown in the evidence. The evidence is that governments are just as stable when they're running as minority or coalition governments, and that you don't end up having more elections. There is one caveat to that, which is having a threshold for the percentage of votes you need to get as a party in order to be represented with seats in the legislature, politicians in the legislature. If you don't have any threshold, which you have very, very low thresholds in Israel and Italy, for example, although Italy recently raised its threshold to deal with this problem somewhat, you can end up with a real fracturing and factionalizing of the party system and a lot of instability as a result. So most people that advocate for a change to a more proportional system want to see something like a 3% or 5% threshold, where any party would have to receive that amount of votes, that percentage of votes, in order to win any seats in the legislature.
So is proportional representation a better way to go? I mean, if you're in District A and there's a tight race and one person wins by a single vote, that means half of the electorate's voice hasn't been heard, really.
Yes, and there's multiple different ways to then count those votes that weren't heard in that particular district, lots of which have complicated, obscure acronyms. There's many different options for then having the proportionality brought into that so that those votes end up being counted in the overall number of seats and politicians that each party has in the legislature and end up with after the election. And again, the International Parliamentary Union has ranked that those proportional systems, and there's a wide variety of them, result in a more representative legislature and, as a result, better decisions for more people. So it is generally considered to be the better way to go.
On the matter of stable governments, and you'd mentioned that, you know, one of the arguments against this kind of a minority or coalition government arguments is about the stability of government. But we have governments that are elected every 4 years, if everything goes according to plan. And you'll often see a government just starting to get onto, you know, its footing when it comes to setting a province, in this particular case, in a certain direction. And then there's a change in government and it all starts over again and all, you know, and then you've got these issues repeating and repeating and repeating, or those cans being kicked down the road because they're all looking for that next election win. Is there a better way to do things in that way, you know, when it comes to terms?
Well, there have been debates about having longer terms in order to give politicians a longer term vision. It's part of the criticism of the first past the post system, and part of the reason why a lot of Canadians think, oh, if you have minority governments and if we had a proportional system with minority governments a lot more, that they would be more unstable and we'd have more elections. But the reason minority governments in Canada have been shorter generally and therefore most people view as less stable is that when you have a first-past-the-post voting system like we have now, the opposition parties or the ruling party in a minority government situation still sees that, oh, if I can just time it correctly, I could get a chance at calling a snap election, forcing a snap election, and the first-past-the-post system would then reward my party because it's at a good time for us to be running and having an election, and we'll end up winning a majority again. So that's what causes the instability, is that there's always that chance of winning a majority with a minority of voters supporting you. When you switch to a proportional system, then that possibility is taken away from all the parties. And as a result, that incentive to try and time an election and call a snap election after a shorter period than 4 years goes away. And so you just end up having as stable governments as you have when you have majorities in a first-past-the-post system. We've even seen, you know, our situation across the country with majority governments where snap elections have still been called in a shorter time period than a four-year term for a government because the government saw a chance to, it was the best time period in the 4 years to call an election and win another majority so that they would be able to go beyond the 4 years for sure. And so there's just all of these incentives of our current voting system that really cause less stability than having a proportional system overall. And again, the experts have studied these and concluded that you get better decisions that are better for more people when you have minority government situations, because you see the compromise across the parties, and all the parties are representing different sectors of society and put all their interests together, and you end up with a better decision overall for more people.
That's not always how it happens, though. There's not always that willingness to agree to this kind of a coalition approach. Why is that?
No, there isn't. I mean, again, that's the first past the post system, where people are wanting to please just their core of voters, because when it comes to an election, getting that core of voters motivated to vote for you is the best way to win a majority power, even though you are supported by a minority of voters. But when you change to a proportional system or a ranked ballot system, where the people would rank candidates first, second, third in their district, and the second place votes would count to who actually ends up winning, and so would the third place votes, those kind of systems cause incentives for politicians to not be so hardline and aiming everything at their core voters and resisting compromising and resisting working with anybody else other than their party and their party leader. So again, it's really the voting system that has been seen in studies to be the cause of a lot of this kind of lack of cooperation, we're in minority government situations in Canada.
Has there been any success in Canada in moving away from first past the post in any jurisdictions?
The closest that we came was in British Columbia, where 57% of people voted in a referendum to have a proportional system. However, the ruling party had said, despite every other vote in the legislature being passed by 50% plus one of politicians, for this referendum, we're going to set a threshold of 60%. So 57%, a majority, said they wanted to change to a proportional system, but the ruling party had set this arbitrary 60% threshold, and so they didn't end up implementing the change. And that's the closest we've come. A lot of the referendums that have been held have kind of been rigged in their structure. For example, one in Prince Edward Island, where they offered five different choices as to what system to switch to. Well, when you have five different choices, you're going to have the electorate likely split between those choices, and 100 divided by 5 equals 20. So if you have a five-way split, you're not going to have a majority for any particular one system, and that was kind of rigged to fail. So that's what's happened generally with those governments that have moved to make those changes, or you've just seen blatant broken promises. The Prime Minister essentially lied to voters. Prime Minister Trudeau in 2015 said this will be the last vote that will be taking place in a federal election using our current first-past-the-post system. And then he didn't make any changes to the system. So that was just a blatant false claim that he made to voters, baited the some percentage of voters to vote for the Liberals on that basis. And then in Quebec, there was a promise to hold a referendum, and it's been delayed and delayed. They actually, initial promise was this, they were going to change the system by passing a law. Then they changed it to say, well, we'll have a referendum first. And whenever there's a referendum on this issue, the ruling party has won the last election, often won a majority, and they have lost the incentive to really change the system. So they try and rig the election and how they structure it, the referendum and how they structure it to try to end up with a result that a majority of people don't support changing the system.
Duff, so I'm afraid we're
a short history of it.
We're completely out of time, but I do appreciate your time this afternoon. It's been a very interesting conversation. As you know, it's on everybody's lips in Newfoundland and Labrador these days. Really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. People can see much more at democracywatch.ca.
And we'll be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Do join us then, and thanks for listening.